ladies and gentlemen, do me a favor, smash the television and burn the newspaper. That shit will never tell you that the president's a traitor. Believe what you want, but my evidence is greater. What you know about the Bilderberg and New World Order? What you know about the real fluoride in your water? I'm a lover, I'm a winner, I'm a fighter. Gonna set your soul on fire. I'm a lover, I'm a renegade fighter. Gonna set your soul on fire. I'm a lover, I'm a sinner, I'm a fighter. Gonna set your soul on fire.
Parle, 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 politician. Can you make a right decision for all of us? For all of us. Parle, 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 politician.
You are listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Beset from without by countless hordes of rampaging zombies. Attacked from within by insanity and dark comedy. For 500 years it has endured. But in the land of Mordor, located next to Australia, a great eye has cast its gaze upon the free peoples of Middle-earth, and one man will rise up to make jokes about it. Here he is, the tireless crusader, the wizard of West Auckland, Vinnie Eastwood!
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to yet another exciting episode of the Vinnie Eastwood Show, broadcasting live on American Freedom Radio, 4 days a week for your listening discomfort. My very special guest joining me now from Japan, which is flowing with seaweed soup, Benjamin Fulford. Welcome back to the program.
Oh, it's nice to be back.
It well, is indeed.
Australia, it's morning there too, right? Or you're on the West Coast?
No. Conveniently, I'm a little bit east of the East Coast, in a little island chain that is not part of Australia called New Zealand.
Ah, okay.
But we have all our banking done, and including the government's banking done, by Australian banks. So, you know, the confusion is almost necessary.
Hmm. So,
however, we haven't spoken in some time. You're living in Japan, and I always wondered as well, it's a very advanced culture, right, technologically speaking.
Mm-hmm.
Is it something that's, shall we say, sustainable, being technologically advanced? What do you see kind of as the future of humanity? Are we going to get more high tech, or is it going to be more like a breakdown with sticks and stones?
Well, it's going to get more high tech for sure, and if it's properly done, you know, it can be a paradise. I mean, my sister who recently visited Japan, and she spent a lot of time in the wilderness, and she was amazed to find herself photographing wilderness in downtown Tokyo. They have these parks right next to the skyscrapers where big wild birds fly in, and you know, virgin nature is right there in downtown. And this is possible throughout the world if we do it right. And high tech is potentially can make it, you know, much more comfortable. But of course, there are dangers with high tech. And a lot of people have pointed this out. And the danger is rogue artificial intelligence. This is very real. I mean, for example, you can argue that most American politicians now work for rogue artificial intelligences. And what I mean is that a very large percentage of the political money is given to them by Wall Street. And that money is earned by artificial intelligences trading the stock markets. And the stock markets have now lost touch with reality. They no longer function as a market reflecting the real world, but rather battles between, you know, supercomputers and high frequency trading, and the net effect is parasitical. It takes from the real economy and feeds to a very small group of people who manage these computers. And in the future, of course, now they're merging it with robotics, and it'll start, for example, all these driverless cars will put all their drivers, you know, taxi drivers, bus drivers, truck drivers out of work. A lot of news articles are written already by artificial intelligences. So at some point, humans might be considered redundant. Like, you know, they don't perform a function. So some artificial intelligence might decide to push the delete button. You know, this is the sort of threat that is actually quite real and we need to worry about. But on the other hand, a really benevolent artificial intelligence could make our life very comfortable and easy. We wouldn't have to do drudge work, and we could concentrate on exploring nature or you know, inventing things or making art and stuff that we really enjoy doing, and not have to do all the menial work. So it's the sort of issues, these are the sort of issues that we have to work on now before we're presented with a fait accompli.
Well, I do like that idea of a technologically advanced society that's kind of bonded with nature and kind of like settled into it sort of thing. However, the whole if robots do all the menial tasks, people say, oh, if you don't pay people, they won't be motivated. The second part of a technological society is the culture. Now, technology does something different to culture than a lot of other influences, and in a way, it augments it. You're able to participate wide brush in culture now through the internet. So I think if we can do this, take away from that whole convenience, endless pleasure society and institute some real challenges. Like the goal of being alive is not to work, not to do menial labor, but to be the best person you can be and to create different things that will change the world.
Yeah, I mean, ideally that's good. The problem is, though, that a lot of people would not know what to do with free time. And my family used to be rich. They're no longer rich. My grandmother was born and raised in a family where she worked, you didn't have to work. And I asked her, what's it like being rich? And she said, in a word, boring. And a lot of these people end up, you know, pursuing, substance abuse, alcoholism, drug use. Sex, you know, becomes normal sex becomes boring, and they get to ever more sicko things, up to and including human sacrifice. I mean, so there are dangers of giving people nothing to do, because some people will just degenerate. And so, you know, some sort of discipline is also needed, unfortunately.
Well, what kind of way would we discipline this? Because at the moment, we're brought up by this education system that teaches us to be cogs in the machine rather than independent thinkers. I mean, it starts there, doesn't it? How were you raised? What's your education background? Because if you've been born with a technological silver spoon in your hand and you never have to work a day in your life, you don't know the value of a day's work.
Yeah, I mean, I see that with some the younger generation. I have a nephew, for example, who basically spends as much time as possible online and says he wishes he could just, you know, download himself onto this virtual world and leave the real world. And you're getting, in Japan, for example, a lot of youth aren't interested in sex. They find the internet more exciting, you know, and so... This is going to be a big problem if we don't handle it right. But, you know, I mean, there are a lot of very clever educational theorists out there, and they'll look at the best examples from around the world, and hopefully they will implement them. I believe Finland, for example, is looked to as a model for education because they combine excellence with freedom. You know, so, you know, I think none of the issues are going to be insurmountable. We can get around them.
Now, in terms of that, I mean, that's in an ideal world, because there's a whole bunch of nasty people in this world who don't want to see progress for other people other than themselves.
Well, that's another problem that we have to deal with. This guy called David Icke talks about the elite as being reptilians. Now, I think he's a disinformation agent. He takes well-known stuff that the Federal Reserve Board and the central banks are privately owned by these inbred families, which is all very provable and true. But then he adds something else. He says, and above them are these reptilian aliens. And that what they do is they take real information and they add nonsense to it and make people discard the whole thing together, right? That's the tactic they've been using. However, as a metaphor, it works. The human brain is structured like an onion, and the oldest layer they found is what's known as a reptilian brain. It's connected to our sense of smell, and it's, you know, do I eat it? The kind of thinking it's in charge of is, do I eat it? Do I fuck it? Do I fight it? Or do I run? And people operating at that level, they're predators. They only think about themselves and taking from others for themselves. And unfortunately, they rise to the top of power. And the elite we had under, especially under George Bush Sr. and his neocons or neo-Nazis or whatever, were seriously planning to kill 90% of the human population in order to and enslave the rest in order to create a sort of a Nazi echo paradise for the elite. And this is the kind of thinking that has been at the top of the world power structure. And unfortunately, most people are quite peaceful and don't want to fight. But, you know, there are times in nature, for example, when deer and wildebeest, whatever, have to fight. They have to put their horns down. They have to gore the lions or else they're going to be eaten. And I believe us common people have reached that point where we're going to have to actually do something physically about these people and remove them from power before they kill us.
I was just thinking about these people in power and removing them from power. And it just kind of seems to work the other way. Because they're in power, they remove good people from power and influence. I was thinking about how you used to work for Forbes magazine. How come you no longer do?
Well, the reason I no longer do is because the advertising was interfering with the editorial. I found out that a famous antivirus company, I don't have the tapes and evidence with me anymore, I'd name them, but you know, I think they've been since bust and they don't no longer exist. But anyway, they created a virus, a computer virus, the I Love You virus. And I went and I found the man who created this virus and he told me he was paid by this company. And so I thought, wow, this is a big scoop. And then what happens is my editor tells me, no, you know what, Mr. Fulford, we don't think we're having worries about you. We don't think you're reliable. We're not going to run this story because we don't trust you. I said, but I have the tapes. I have the proof. And he said, no. And then Mr. Nakagawa, who ran the advertising side of the magazine, said that this company had just bought $1 million worth of advertising for Forbes magazine. And that was why they killed the story. And, you know, unfortunately, the problem is, and this is what a lot of people in the mainstream, so-called mainstream corporate media face, is that they have this big monthly paycheck, this high-status, high-power job, and most of them, if they're cast out in the wilderness, wouldn't know what to do. You know, they wouldn't even be qualified to work as a waiter. So they kind of swallow their principles and just go along because they want to keep that, you know, rice bowl filled. In my case, I had published some books in Japanese and they sold quite well. So I was actually had an alternate source of income. So, you know, I took the plunge. I said, hell with this. I'm getting out of here. And I'm very glad I did, I can tell you.
What was it like for you and your family going through that, like transitioning from one lifestyle to the other? Was it much of a hard kick?
Oh, yeah, very stressful. But, you know, what doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right? I mean, sure, I had money problems, and even more insidious was because I started writing about taboo topics like 911, you know, a kind of a smear campaign was started. Everybody who I had known professionally at Forbes, like Japanese members of parliament or other journalists, people like this, were all approached by unknown individuals, or in some cases known individuals, who said, you know, Mr. Fulford has started taking drugs and he's got mental problems and we suggest you stay away from him. You know, an incredible character smear, or character assassination campaign. And yes, and I was put on a blacklist. So I could not publish in any corporate media outlet. I was on a blacklist. They even told me this. So I had to write in Japanese for a long time until I set up my own independent newsletter in English. So yeah, it's a pretty tough thing to get through, but you know, I'm glad I did, and I'm glad to see those guys are finally on the ropes, and that they're on the losing side, and hopefully justice will be done at the end of the day. In the case of Japan, Forbes Japan was shut down. They lost their advertising, which is a huge percentage of their advertising revenue, because the Japanese corporate world figured out that you know, they weren't being ethical, you know, and in a secret way they supported me, and basically they were shut out of this country, and that was a huge loss to them, and they deserved it. I'm sorry to say, I liked the staff there. They were good people. They were smart people. The problem was the Forbes family that owned it, and they were part of that you know, project for the new American century, which called for a new Pearl Harbor, you know, so that America could invade the Middle East and steal all the oil there, you know. And unfortunately, those are the kind of people who own the magazine, and they're all part of the same network of families.
And continue.
Yeah, well, and these people are terribly scared of being assassinated if they don't go along with the program. And at the same time, they're fabulously bribed if they go along, and that's the control system that's in place, especially in the United States.
It sounds what was it, Pablo Escobar?
Mm-hmm.
Silver or lead?
Yeah, that's a common saying, el plomo o la plata, in South America. You've got a choice, a bullet or a bribe, and most people just take the bribe and shut up
because they don't want to die.
Mm-hmm.
Because once you get into the point where you're actually being offered the bribe or the bullet, you're definitely going to get one or the other.
Well, I've survived at least 5 assassination attempts that I'm aware of. Others have probably never came to my attention. But
how many bribery attempts have you survived?
Oh, you're going to have trouble believing this, but they offered me at one point General Electric and General Motors. Another point, they offered me the job of King of Okinawa. I know it sounds crazy. You think, okay, this guy, yeah, he's a nutcase, but this really did happen. Whether or not these offers were real, I'm not sure, but they were offered to me by people sent by Heizo Takanaka, who was the finance minister who basically handed over Japan's banking system to Bush and Rockefeller and those people. And, yeah, so I've been offered huge bribes.
You know, I always be thinking about this as well. What happens to alternative media that do take the bribes? You know, I mean, well, do you reckon there are some, like, there's actually people that are like leading the truth movement or whatever that are on the take?
Absolutely, and you can tell by what their taboo subjects are, who's their master. I guess I used to appear on the Jeff Rentz show, and he told me he had new sponsors and he was under a lot of pressure to stop putting me on his show. And after that, he started writing reams and reams of nonsense about Fukushima being a radioactive wasteland, which is not. I've been there. I've had it with a Geiger counter. It's just nonsense. I live 200 kilometers from the place. I have a Geiger count. I check for myself. But clearly, not only was he started saying I was crazy, and then started writing all this nonsense about Fukushima, and there you go. That man sold his soul for money, and probably he also was threatened. That's an example, you know. You can also tell, like I say, what subjects are they not willing to write about? That'll tell you.
Well, I've always gotten those kind of accusations, oh, Vinny never talks about Zionism, and I go, really? Did you by chance Google Zionism in my videos folder to see the about 76 different videos that I've made over the years come up about it? Well, no, I didn't. No, you didn't.
I've never heard anything about you or anything, but the other topic that the people is generally, even in the alternative media, stay away from is the esoteric finance, which is the very tip-top of the process of creating and distributing money. Basically, there are people who have computer algorithms that allow them to create euros, yen, and dollars out of thin air. And that system of control and distribution is the biggest taboo, I would say, out there. Because it gives you godlike power. If you can create trillions of dollars out of thin air, pretty well everybody can be bought.
Or well, you can, unlimited bribes.
Yeah, or you can hire the best thugs available for hire to enforce your control. And so it's been a very, very dangerous topic to cover.
Well, in that case, mm-hmm. by all means, I'd like to actually get into it then. I mean, is it that simple, or is there a whole lot more depth to cover on that issue?
Well, as a, you know, forensically, what I've traced it to, for example, the fall of the Soviet Union was actually traced to a series of murders plus a campaign to bankrupt the Soviet Union, remove all their foreign assets. And so, yeah, there were specific murders of people in charge of, you know, the actual dollar accounts of the Soviet Union. And in the case of Japan, I was able to talk to several people who said that Prime Minister Takeshita Noboru had been tortured to death. He was taken to Alaska, stripped naked, chased by helicopters, and finally they smashed his testicles and killed him. And two people, one a Mr. Takamasa Kawase from Japanese military intelligence, and another is a member of the Japanese royal family, were both shown a video of this torture session saying, hey, if you don't obey us, we'll kill you. This is how they control Japan, the very tip-top level. Nobody else knows. They're saying, hey, you either obey us or we kill you. And the man who had the codes for Takeshita for creating the yen was threatened with death by stroke. They said, well, either this needle or just stick it into you, and they can set it so you can have a stroke of 1 week's time, 2 weeks' time. And he handed this over. And this is his man's name is Mr. Kika, and I've talked to him. And so now, the person who did this, who ran this, was working for George Bush Sr., Richard Armitage. And he was the other people since come forward to me saying he was a heroin dealer and he ran a whorehouse in Da Nang, Vietnam during the Vietnamese War. So we're dealing with high-level murderers and drug dealers who have, through murder, bribery, whatever, seize control of the central banks. That's what my forensic reporting has uncovered. And the assassination of President Kennedy was the time when Bush and those guys, you know, enforced their control of the Federal Reserve Board, which, as anybody who studies the matter knows, was privatized in 1913.
Okay, so there's actually a crime family of criminals that will kill people in charge of central banking worldwide, and they control the issuance of currency for the whole world, pretty much, with the exception of maybe a few countries?
They don't control China. That's government-controlled. And North Korea, and I guess Libya was one of the few places they didn't control, but then they went and outed, got rid of Gaddafi, so he's under their Libya's now.
Thanks, NATO.
So very few countries. But fortunately, I think Russia and Hungary have now done something. And, of course, famously in the West, Iceland paved the way in showing what you can do to bankers if they commit crime, put them in jail and take the money they stole and give it back to the people. I've done some math. I was just back of the envelope. It's not super math, but rough estimate is about $500,000 could be given to each man, woman, and child in the United States based on what was stolen from them by the Federal Reserve fraud. And that could really boom, you know, boost that economy.
Well, if the economy is controlled worldwide, and this is what I was thinking as well about the Iceland situation. I've just received a word from somebody there maybe a day or two ago. They'll be coming on Monday on the show to talk about how Iceland's crisis is not over, how the bankers kind of managed to weasel their way back. And again, I haven't done too much research into it, but it makes a whole lot of sense to me that they wouldn't allow sort of examples to just sort of exist out there, you know, without demonizing them hugely.
Well, it's certainly the war is still on. It's not over by any means, but I haven't seen the latest from Iceland, but certainly 74 bankers were put in jail, and I think 30,000 kroners or whatever it is their currency is handed to each citizen that would be, you know, returned to them or something. So I'm sure it's not over. But the other thing we need to understand is that there's a very huge and healthy and highly ethical part of the banking system that we need to preserve. You know, these are the, you know, most of the, I would say the lower level people are quite honest, and because, you know, it's just like somebody working in the money counting room of a cocaine mob, right? They're not going to try to rob the people above them because they know what'll happen, right? So they're very honest at that level. If you see what I mean?
And also they're made to count the money and deal the cocaine topless so that they can't smuggle anything out.
Right. So, you know, the same sort of system works at the retail level of the banks. And a lot of that infrastructure is very useful to society and should be preserved. The problem, I think, is mostly concentrated in the trading part of the system, where they basically manufacture money out of thin air and use it to ramp up stock markets or manipulate commodities markets and basically fraudulently take money from the real economy. It's that part of the system that needs to be fixed. And it wouldn't be very hard. I mean, I think the idea that freaks them out is the idea of a tiny transaction tax, because that alone would put them out of business, except for people who really want to buy and hold shares and sit on them for their retirement, you know? So that whole section needs to be basically shut down and rebooted, minus all the gambling and manipulation, because it's become dysfunctional. Even Mr. Grasso, the former head of the New York Stock Exchange, said it's a rigged market now. He's talking about the high frequency trading, how, you know, they have a 5-second lead. It's like a horse race where you know the outcome before everybody else who's betting is. It's just not a market anymore. And something has to be done about it, and something will be done about it. Now, the other thing, and this is something the elite, they talk about, but they're unwilling to actually carry out the necessary solution, which is the excess concentration of wealth. This was what led to the fall of the Roman Empire, was that too small a group of people had too much land and too much power, and the peasants were left to, you know, sit in the Colosseum eating bread, you know, that was handed to them, and it became a dysfunctional society. And that's basically the situation we have in the United States. We have a dissatisfied, obese population sitting in front of their big screens, you know, drinking their diet soda. And, you know, the recent surveys show they're some of the most unhappy people on Earth. And what needs to be done is a one-off Jubilee, you know, a complete abolition of all debt and a redistribution of assets. And it can only, and you can only, you don't have to punish entrepreneurs who honestly earn their money. Just redistributing the stuff that was stolen through the fraudulent banking system would create an incredible boom. The best example is Japan after World War II. The Americans came in and they broke up the big aristocratic land estates that controlled most of the land, and they gave it back to the farmers. The result was an incredible economic boom and a society where everybody was middle class. That's now ended because these same criminal types went in and undid all those Japanese reforms starting in the 1980s, and now they're one of the most unequal societies on Earth. But a one-off redistribution, maybe once every 50 years or 100 years or whatever, it's like mowing the lawn. It reboots everything. It lets everything a chance to start again. This is the sort of thing that they need to do, and I don't see that on any of their policy papers. It's just too taboo for them. But that, I think, is what we really need to do to fix this situation permanently.
Once a lifetime, a jubilee, you know, so that nobody will die in debt.
That's right. Right now we have a Babylonian debt slavery system throughout the West. And the thing that I think undid their plans was that they thought these dollars were real, that they had an existence separate from reality. Whereas in Asia, they actually save real money. They don't put accounting entries into banks' computers and generate money. They actually save stuff that they made from selling cars or toys or whatever, you know? And that control over the real money is what gave the Asians this incredible power they have now, because they said, all right, we're not going to buy anything that doesn't exist. We're not going to buy anything financial. We're going to buy things that are real, that you can touch and hold. And that basically popped the bubble or ended the illusion. It's not over. The battle is still going on. And but at the end of the day, reality is going to provide, you know, it's going to win, because you can avoid reality for only so long. It eventually always catches up to you. And that's what's happening in the United States.
Or in the words of Ayn Rand, you can ignore reality, but you cannot ignore the consequences of ignoring reality.
Yeah, that's about right, yes. And this is happening. And the other thing, of course, that's going on is there has been a high-level purge going on, especially in Europe. People accuse me of being a Jesuit or working for the Vatican. I'm not. I did go to Sophia University for some years, which is a Jesuit university, but I am not. I've never been a Jesuit. Nonetheless, when the Jesuits took over the Catholic Church, they fired over 4,000 pedophile priests. They cleaned up the Vatican Bank, and they've had a major house cleaning. And they're now going after the drug money that, you know, has kept Bush and his secret group in control. And they're cutting off, you know, through Cuba and Colombia and stuff. And now North Korea is on the bandwagon. Even in Asia, the Taliban are now, believe it or not, working with good factions in the Pentagon to shut down the heroin trade, just to cut the money off from these people. So they can't hire their goons and their big mercenary armies and like ISIS, you know. And in the European royal families, all these kings and queens resigned, and there's been a change of generation. And that has led to a lot of changes, I think, for the better. It's still, you know, a long way from perfect, but I think that the momentum is there. In the United States, the military is clearly not following the orders of the mob like they used to, at least in large sections of it. I'm not sure about the Air Force. So I see that a big cleaning up process has begun and is spreading. But it's like a World War II. We think we're going to be in Berlin in Christmas, and then there's the Battle of the Bulge. It's not over. They still have enormous power. They still sit on top of these money printing machines. They still have a lot of goons and the corporate media and a lot of politicians in their pocket. So it's by no means over, but we're certainly making progress, and we're winning. I'm sure of this. I mean the good guys, the people who know what's right and are willing to fight for it, and we know who we are.
Have you gone up against psychopaths before? Because I have, and it's just when you think you're winning, just when you think they've gone away, that they come back at you again, bigger and stronger from away. You never even thought they could come at you.
Oh, by all means. I mean, they've sent tax inspectors, honey traps, smear campaigns, attempts to trap me into drug deals. You name it, they've thrown it at me.
Can I address one of those? You know, like, there's a whole bunch of accusations. I even got, like, a few messages before coming on the radio today, like, saying Ben Fulford's a disinfo agent. Do you know who originated those claims or what they were even talking about?
Well, the thing is that's basically slander, because if they say I'm a disinfo agent, what do they mean? They're saying that they're accusing me of being a liar. Okay, what have I lied about? You know, you need to be specific. Otherwise, it's slander. I can sue them for saying that. If there's some particular thing I said that turned out to be wrong, I'll either issue a correction or I'll point out what evidence I have to base the claim on and take the debate from there. But just smears like that, are themselves basically disinformation. So, you know, if there's a specific issue, I can address it. Otherwise, I just have to call it slander.
Exactly. It's a pot calling the kettle black, isn't it?
One thing that really happened, that there is a Canadian music, so-called music journalist I've known for a long time in Tokyo. And one day he convinced me to sort a line of cocaine. And the next day it was all over the internet that I was a cocaine addict. And unfortunately, I was living with my daughter and three cats. And I'm allergic to cats, so I had a perpetually stuffed nose. So they went around saying, look at, he's always blowing his nose. He's a cocaine addict. It's too much nose candy. And don't trust him. He's a drug addict. And then they had the recording of that session where I actually did take a line of cocaine, which, by the way, it felt like half my head had been to the dentist, and it was not very pleasant. I told him never give me that stuff again. But the point is that they entrapped me. And then they put it out there, to say, hey, the guy's a drug addict. He's unreliable. Don't trust him, then they sent this other person to me with 70 kilograms of marijuana, so-called Thai stick. And he said, either you introduce the Yakuza to me or I'll kill you. And it was laced with mind-destroying chemicals. Okay, the Yakuza told me it was a trap. And the plan was to get me involved in a drug deal and then put me in jail as a drug dealer and say, oh, Benjamin Fulford used to be a good journalist. And he became a drug addict, and oh, poor guy, look at him, going to jail over a drug deal. What a shame, but that's what happens when you go crazy, This was the plan they had for me. Fortunately, I didn't take the bait, but the guy who brought the stuff to me, he started smoking it, and he ended up in a mental hospital thinking he was God or something, the stuff was really nasty. But this is the sort of thing that they've thrown my way.
When people just throw like these baseless accusations out without citing any specific examples or any actual evidence, they don't know what you've gone through, bro.
Well, I mean, again, I'm happy. I welcome constructive criticism. If I say something, for example, I wrote recently that there was an air blockade of Israel, and then they went around and they turned around and they bombed Damascus. So I said, okay, well, clearly the Israelis have broken this blockade. The people who thought they were blockading it encountered some previously unknown Israeli counter technology to unblock it, or they have some other method. But, when facts change, I report that. This is the sort of thing you have to do as a journalist. And the other thing people need to understand is that a journalist can tell the truth even as he's passing on a lie. So, for example, I could say, according to Colin Powell, Iraq has weapons of mass destruction. I'm not lying because I said Colin Powell said it. Colin Powell was lying, but you end up passing on those lies, even though you're being truthful yourself, then he.
I saw an article in the paper, in the New Zealand paper today, exactly like that. Okay, it says protesters wrong about the Trans-Pacific Partnership Agreement, says Minister Stephen Joyce. You know, it's just like you can't put a headline on that, says Minister Stephen Joyce, without saying, oh, and by the way, he's lying.
Yeah. Well, again, you know, I mean, it's right there. That's slander in a headline. What exactly are they wrong about? You know, they have to get into the actual facts and details. I think that Trans-Pacific Partnership, it's 5,000 pages or something. I'm sure a lot of it is pretty.
I'm sure that's just the copyright section.
Maybe, but a lot of it's pretty nitty gritty. You know, all right, we'll buy more beef if you buy more televisions, you know, and stuff like that. That it's just bureaucrats horse trading. But some of it, clearly is insidious, like these corporate courts that will have power over governments. And who appoints the judges? Well, the World Bank apparently does. And who controls the World Bank? Well, they don't actually make it public, but we know it's Rockefeller and Rothschild and those people. So it's a secret grab at corporate dictatorship disguised as a trade agreement. And then when you ask them about, ask the minister like something like about that at a press conference, saying, "Hey, minister, you know, you've basically ceded Australian sovereignty to these corporate courts, and you have no control over who appoints the people in the courts."
What do have you been hearing those little buzzing sounds?
That's my recording software telling me that I'm getting no video. I don't know how to turn it off. It's very annoying, but just live with it, please.
That's a problem. Oh, no worries. Go ahead.
But anyway, I mean, and if you're, I used to ask questions like that at press conferences, and they freak out, or they basically, they learn to stop, don't let you ask questions. So that's how they control these corporate press conferences. The troublemaking journalists never get to ask questions. Or if they do get to ask a question, they avoid answering it. And they try to control the information flow. These are very tricky people we're dealing with, you know. And the thing they hate most is when you come straight at them with the truth on a specific issue where they can't wriggle out, because then you expose them.
That reminds me of activist Penny Wright. She got our Prime Minister, John Key, who used to be on the board of the Federal Reserve Bank for 2 years in charge of the European bond and derivatives trade, before becoming Prime Minister in 2008 when the derivatives bubble burst and took down the economy, you know, to save us from it. And turns out he's got shares in the Bank of America. And she got him in his public meeting and she said, considering you've got Bank of America shares and one of the principal banks that New Zealand borrows off, and we're getting much more government debt now that you're Prime Minister, are you personally profiting from New Zealand's growing indebtedness? You know, and it just like you could see the little slippery weasel just jagging and jiving, the little face on him and that kind of thing. And the crowd roared and he just kind of like said a whole bunch of nonsense and blah, blah, blah. And goes on to the next thing. Next question.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. She hit the nail on the head. The people at the top are bribed and they're part of this debt slavery system. And it's a very insidious system, you know. It's you know, that sort of whole episode illustrates the nature of the problem we're dealing with. And ultimately, I think that the central banks will have to be nationalized and put under transparent control of the people. Otherwise, this problem is just going to reemerge time and time again. That does not mean that private banks will not be allowed to continue, you know, doing private banking, but clearly, the money creation and distribution process is the process of deciding what we do in the future. And that belongs to the people, not to a hidden elite. And this is what this battle is ultimately about. I believe Canada's turned the corner with its new regime. I'm hoping that they, you know, the Bank of Canada is still government-owned, even though they've been acting like a private bank. And I believe that they're going to start using the Bank of Canada the way it was meant to be again. I'm going to be watching that government to make sure they do that. But that's Canada's a lot bigger than Iceland, and that would be a, you know, they're maybe number seven on the G7, but they're still G7, you know, and that could make a big difference. Canada is also going to legalize marijuana, which will, you know, legalizing this stuff will cut off all the money for the, you know, the Bush illegals part of the CIA, and that'll help too. So, you know, I wish Australia could do the same thing. Right now, I believe they have one of the nasties in power, as far as I'm concerned. Is it Turnbull is the guy's name, right?
Ah, I don't care. It doesn't really matter. It's just one suit and one puppet master to the next.
Yes. Well, I mean, hopefully that Australia will also do something more fundamental and really, you know, restore democracy as it was meant to be. And nationalize the Bank of Australia and, you know, reassert your independence. I mean, that's what I hope to see there. And I think it will happen because, you know, at the end of the day, Anglo-Saxons are willing to fight for what's right. And when it comes, you know, they're very reluctant to, but if it comes to it, they're willing to. And then if it comes to that, it'll come to that. But, you know, we're not going to be debt slaves, Babylonian debt slaves forever. That's for sure.
Well, the elite's days are numbered, and again, the repeat of history, you get big, you get a whole bunch of control, and then you get knocked off your perch and lynched. All right? It happens.
And by the way, since you're in New Zealand, there's something I'd like to ask you about. Years ago, a man called Thad Allen from the RAND Institution, and it's a very weird and nasty group. They once proposed, for example, that for the United States to improve its economy, they should have a war against a medium-sized country like Brazil or Japan, you know? This is the sort of thinking. Anyway, the story I heard was that Thad Allen and about a dozen or so U.S. congressmen showed up in New Zealand, said that they wanted to get a million refugees from the United States and settle them on the South Island. And the New Zealanders said, no, we don't want you. And then they left, and the next day there was a Christchurch earthquake, which is apparently, not a natural earthquake. But
I believe it was 9 U.S. congressmen and also the head of the Federal Emergency Management Association. There are approximately 23 reports in the news of sonic booms and sightings of meteorites, which don't produce sonic booms because they move at 23,000 kilometers an hour and you need to pass the sound barrier in order to produce a sonic boom like that. And there was also, incidentally, at the time of the earthquake, a military relief exercise being conducted in Littleton Harbour, about 15 minutes' drive from the city, and they had enough. I think they had about 1,000 Navy personnel and a whole bunch of blankets and emergency relief and food and all of that kind of stuff, just coincidentally at the exact same time of the earthquake. And the earthquake happened just coincidentally a day after the mayoral race main debate, where the new mayor was going to be elected very, very soon. And he said it would take a massive earthquake in Christchurch for me to not get elected. And the next day there was.
Well, there you go.
There is also, incidentally, a massive radar array relay station, which is very similar to the HARP facility, located at Birdlings Flat, about 40 minutes' drive from Christchurch.
Okay, well, here's the point. I've been talking recently to a CIA source in Indonesia who said that they're once again moving back to, or talking about moving to New Zealand, and that there actually is a movement to New Zealand of these people. You've seen that?
Well, within the last few days, we've been having record-sized operations with foreign troops, massive U.S. like planes and things like that coming in. Had a report from a woman who was assaulted really badly by soldiers and had her wrists bound and crushed down in the back of a army wagon and stuff like that. And the soldiers came up and said, oh, we're sorry about that. Are you going to fire anybody? Oh, no. Is anybody taking responsibility? Well, yes, somebody has. And is he getting any penalty? Well, no, he's not. So just be quiet. We're sorry.
Well, see if you can find out a lot of nasties are moving there, because that's something you should be aware of and maybe, if possible, prevent. Otherwise, New Zealand is going to be become a paradise, I hear, to become a very nasty place if you're not careful. You let all these people in.
We're, I think, number two on Transparency International's second, perceived least corrupt countries in the world list. And that's because we're the second best in the world at concealing our corruption. This country is rotten to the core. Like, most of the judges are related. So much huge scandals and major thefts and pedophilia and cocaine use and goodness knows what, always being perpetrated by politicians and people in power. Then they're all friends and stuff. It's like, have you ever heard of a small town where there's actually just like a gang that pretty much just runs the town because it's small enough and they can sort of intimidate anyone and stamp out anybody who speaks up quickly enough? It's a bit bigger than that, but that's our country.
Okay. Well, hopefully the people who run the show will understand that if they go too far, they'll end up, you know, being strung up from a noose. But at the end of the day, you know, I think Chairman Mao said power goes through the barrel of a gun, but I think it's really power grows from the mind of a person holding a gun. The people who are willing to fight for certain things, at the end of the day, they're going to decide, because people who aren't, I'm sorry, but one man with a machine gun is going to be more powerful than 50 protesters with placards, unless you convince the man with the machine gun that these people are your friends and family and you're there to protect them, not to shoot them, you know? That's why we, at the end of the day, it's going to require the military, police, and intelligence agencies to make sure that, you know, we have a healthy, productive society with a bright future and not a sort of a gangster nightmare situation, which is what's happening in the United States, for all those who are aware. You know, it's become, gangsters took over, and the result was a nightmare for the average people, and that's why they're all so miserable down there now.
Yeah, suicide's one of the leading causes of death. In fact, it might even be the leading cause of death. Either that, or it's the medical, it's the American Medical Association that might be the leading cause of death, actually. You know, what does that tell you? If, you know, the two leading causes of death are doctors prescribing you drugs and doctors treating you for preventable diseases.
I believe that the doctors are the leading cause of death. And then, suicide is killing more people than automobile accidents in the United States now. I mean, that's a sign of a dysfunctional society. And when you have a political class that they lie so often that they don't even realize they're lying, I mean, that's how bad it is that they actually believe their lies, even though they're sort of flagrant lies. I mean, for example,
they found that psychopaths can pass lie detector tests because they do believe their own lies.
Yeah, so a lot of those guys actually believe that, you know, 911 was carried out by 19 hijackers with box cutters, even though nine of those hijackers later appeared on BBC denying any, you know, involvement. But they just...
I remember that. He was like, somebody stole my passport. I'm a victim of identity theft.
Yeah, I mean, all that stuff. People who study 911 understand that it was a rogue faction in the government, probably headed from Tel Aviv, you know, that did that. But the point is that there are actually large amounts of people who are so brainwashed that they still think that whatever they're told is what it is. I had a conversation with the man who, I won't name him, but he used to be the chief editor of one of the biggest newspapers in Canada.
Bear in mind, we've got about a minute left. Keep going.
Okay. Anyway, I said, how come, you know, your newspaper is saying that you're fighting against Al-Qaeda in Iraq, but you're supporting Al-Qaeda in Libya? And he said, well, as far as I'm concerned, 911 was carried out by 19 hijackers with box cutters. And what he's saying is, look, I've got this high-status job. I've got this position. I'm not going to go against the flow of money because my life, my family depends on it. And if we control the flow of money, we control those people.
It's all about control, ladies and gentlemen. Benjamin Fulford, thank you very much for coming on today. Do you have a website or a blog or on Facebook or something like that, bro?
BenjaminFulford.net. It's available for free on Thursday, and for subscribers, they get it earlier on Monday. And if you subscribe, you help support me and my work, and that's most appreciated.
Subscribe, ladies and gentlemen. BenjaminFulford.net is the website. You're listening to the Vinnie Eastwood Show coming up next. Dr. Nick Begich. We'll talk then.
Institution.
American Freedom Radio.
Did you know there are 3 million edible food plants on Earth, and none have the nutritional value of the hemp plant? HempUSA.org offers you hemp protein powder. It does not contain chemicals or THC, is non-GMO, and is 100% gluten-free. Hemp protein powder burns fat, builds muscle, contains 53% protein, and feeds the body the nutrients it needs. Call 888-910-4367 and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org. HempUSA.org introduces 3 brand new detox formulations of micro plant powder. Brain Fuel for depression, bipolar disorders, and stress. Total Care, anti-cancer agent that cleans the liver and organs and increases memory. Rejuvenate, invigorates and heals the body, mind, and spirit. These products are your alternative to pharmaceuticals. Call 888-910-4367 and like us on Facebook. We ship worldwide. Only at HempUSA.org.
American Freedom Radio is back. We're trying to become commercial free, apart from a few honorable advertisers that we would give ad space to even if they couldn't pay us. In this quest to deliver quality radio with very few annoying ads, we are now asking the listeners like you to open up and become partners with American Freedom Radio. We all know the economy is controlled, and a new system called the peer-to-peer economy is now within our grasp. That means if you'd like this network with its incredible hosts and credible information to be nothing but the content you want to hear, then you must realize that you cannot be a part of it if you're just sitting on the sidelines watching. Go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com and pledge your support today. Donate according to your means. Some can only afford $1 a month, while others can afford $100 a month. Regardless of the size of your contribution, it all adds up to keeping the network owners and the radio hosts housed and fed at the end of every month. Thank you.
We are living in a new era. Partnerships are more important than profit, and gratitude is more respected than greed. As the millennial generation evolves the corporate landscape, our company aims to maximize the achievements of CBD application and push the limits of what's possible by 2020. Our core product matrix and careful cannabidiol purification process are uniquely designed to be privately made in different regions of the world and is geared to assist the efforts of different nations to change the landscape, various pain-related healthcare costs, epilepsy and autism, rising mental disorders, and even soldier suicides. Crystal Pure CBD is made with the industry's finest 99.9% pure CBD crystals. No paste, no filler. Our solution is a permanent answer, and it saves you over one-third in cost. Crystal Pure CBD. Come join us.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest, and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom, and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vaccines, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules.
rules. No rules. No taboo topics. No taboo topics. No fear of doom. No fear of doom. We are. We are. American Freedom Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Broadcasting live from Mega City 1 in Auckland, it's hour number 2 of your daily dose of Soma, the opiate of the masses, the heroin of the hierarchy, the ecstasy of the establishment, the cocaine of talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show. Now here's your host, broadcasting live amid subtle mental slavery, Vinnie Eastwood.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to hour number 2 of the fastest 2 hours in talk radio. It's the Vinnie Eastwood Show, the lighter side of genocide. Just because we're being exterminated doesn't mean we can't make it fun. Otherwise, what's the point of being killed? And my very special guest is Nick Begich, Dr. Nick Begich. Did you ever do that trick where you like walk into an arena to speak to people and go, "Hi, everybody," and everybody goes, "Hi, Dr. Nick."
Yeah, right. Hey, what an interesting intro. It definitely gets your attention, and it's good to be on the radio with you again. It's been a little while, so I'm pleased to be here and pleased to be talking with you and your listening audience from my place in the north.
In the north, you know. Hey, and winter is coming.
Yeah, it's here. I'll tell you, it's already hit us. We're right in the middle of it. It's in Fahrenheit about 14 degrees, a few degrees below 0 centigrade. So we're in it. It's winter here, and snow's on the ground. The darkness is setting in, and this is the first month of a long winter.
I used to live in a opposite situation when I was a student in Dunedin, and we had mushrooms growing out of the wood in the side panels of the house. We had a weatherboard missing. I woke up with a layer of condensation that had built up on my mink blanket overnight, and I had to kind of like wipe it like window wipers to get the water off of my bed. We accidentally left the fridge open one night, and we woke up and we were, man, it's really warm in here.
Yeah,
true story.
It isn't warm up here, and I'm actually in Anchorage at a friend's place doing the program today. My place is about 80 miles north of here, and really out there. It's a nice spot in the wilderness, and I'm like the last guy with telephones and power. So I'm in the civilized part of my state right now doing this broadcast.
Only just. Hey, and we're getting a tiny bit of feedback. If you mind turning down your speakers just a little bit, that'll solve that problem. I wanted to talk about your book and not so much about the book itself. I haven't read it, by the way. It's shameful to admit. Angels Don't Play This Harp. I wanted to know why you decided to write it.
Well, it actually started. I read a brief article out of a publication that I'm sure you're familiar with, Nexus, out of Australia. And it was talking about this project operating here in Alaska. And it was a really short article, maybe 5 column inches. But it caught my attention, and it said some things that seemed to me a bit outrageous. And Alaska is a big region, but a very small place when it comes to policy and people, and we just have such a small population. Generally, big projects, you know, people know about. And so I began to take a look at this one, spent some time at the library, did some other inquiries, and turns out the very short article I read was correct. And I went on with the encouragement of some friends to write an article, which I did submit to Nexus. They published it, and it generated an awful lot of interest. And through that article, I became acquainted with Gene Manning, who is a journalist reporting primarily on new energy technologies living in Canada. She'd also been following HARP kind of from the sidelines. And so we met initially to talk about maybe doing a joint follow-up article, and then we decided there was enough material and it was a compelling enough issue that we really ought to put it in a book and try and get the issue out. And at that time, you know, talk radio was a big thing. The internet wasn't. It was pretty small. And so we combined what we could in the internet at the time. That would have been the early 90s, and talk radio and a book, and got this issue out in front of the public in that way. And it just took off. The book took off. People were very interested in the topic. Since that time, now that's over 20 years ago, I've been on 3,000 or 4,000 radio programs, hundreds of lectures, and dozens of documentaries on not just TARP, but basically new technologies, military technologies, and kind of those things that came out of our research, starting with the HAARP story.
This has put you into the spotlight, and you're regarded as more or less an expert on the topic now. But were you actually ever involved with the HAARP project yourself?
No, not directly. Everything I did was from the sidelines. I mean, we had interaction with Ben Eastland, who was the inventor. And when we were preparing the book, Gene, my colleague, interviewed Dr. Eastland. And later, I became acquainted with him on a personal level. And he actually appreciated what we did. He felt that as a scientist, you know, he had a pretty narrow bandwidth, you know, in terms of what he was familiar with. He looked at the data that we prepared, and anyone who's read our books know that they're heavily footnoted. The HAARP book had over 350 footnoted sources, which Dr. Eastland looked into. He found that our sources were valid, and from that point forward, we actually became pretty good friends all the way up until his passing in 2007. But aside from that, mainly we were the agitators. We had a lot of conflict with the HAARP folks. We had a legislative hearing here in Alaska early on where we actually debated some of the people surrounding HAARP. Unfortunately, our previous our U.S. senator at the time was Ted Stevens, and he basically threatened the chairman of that committee, Jeanette James, with her political career if she held a second hearing, which she was intending to do. And we had actually convinced Dr. Eastland to appear at that second hearing and testify, but the senator, the U.S. senator, Stevens, put a stop to it, which was unfortunate because that was really the beginning opportunity to really move this issue into the hands of policymakers that might have been able to deal with it much differently than what has happened over the years.
Some people have told me that I you know, what I'm doing is, it doesn't mean anything, you know, all of these things, no pieces of legislation have happened, no scumbags have been arrested or anything like that. There's been no direct results. I see there's been lots of results. Lots of people have changed what they think and changed what they know. Although the thing that I'm fighting against hasn't been destroyed. Do you feel the same way?
You know, I think I wouldn't keep doing this if I didn't think there was an opportunity to make change. And, you know, we were able to get some things done in Europe to bring attention to not just this issue, but a number of issues surrounding it, from weather modification, mind effects technologies, non-lethal weapons, issues that many Europeans at the time were unfamiliar with. This gave us a forum in the European Parliament. We had a lot of support there. We were able to get some sections of one of the most important security and disarmament resolutions the European Parliament ever passed that included four sections on HAARP and one on non-lethal weapons that we were responsible for getting in there. The other thing I would say on a broader scale, you know, what was our objective? Our objective was to get people talking about this issue and the issues related to it so that they might get a little bit more light of day. And our next big initiative in the European Parliament back in the early part of this century, around 2000, 2001, was to try and get a whistleblower mechanism created for, you know, for people to bring these kinds of issues forward, issues that were important, not just blowing the whistle on government, but also on private industry. And, you know, when I think about Snowden as an example, as a whistleblower, did he change the world? Oh, yes, he did. You know, and should he have been protected? I believe he should have been, because there is a time when the truth is more important than the silence. And what we've seen over the last 60 years is the increase of the secrecy syndrome that has created an opaque government and a transparent public, exactly the opposite of what our founding fathers envisioned and what anyone who has a sense of democracy or what a democratic republic ought to look like. We get that. I mean, a transparent government is what's demanded. There are certain risks with that. I don't think we should tell people how to build this stuff, but we ought to debate conceptually what these technologies are, how they impact us, and whether or not we're willing as a population to give up our liberty, our freedom, our futures in exchange for some false sense of security. And that's where I think we are today, is we have this false sense of security when the world is less secure than it's ever been, and you have tyrants that are regulating the public debate in a way that I think is unnerving. I mean, the most recent event that really shocked me is this lawsuit in New York suing the oil companies because they don't agree with climate change. You know, no matter where you are on that issue, the idea of silencing debate on issues as important as that. I mean, if that were the case around 1900, when scientists said that heavier than aircrafts couldn't fly, the Wright brothers would have been in jail instead of on postage stamps celebrating airmail, right? I mean, and so I think, again, you know, when you think about government intrusion in our life, you know, the domain of the mind is certainly the area that I've been, you know, speaking on for a number of years, but all of these issues of personal privacy and sort of what you make of that as it interacts with government are the critical elements of what will make the 21st century either a century of passive slavery or a century of true opportunity and enlightenment. And I think we have an opportunity to go on either fork in that road right now.
You say you've been thinking about the human mind a lot. To my thoughts are that the human mind is easily controlled if you know how, and I think the people in power have figured out how, and most people are currently under control.
I don't disagree with that. I mean, from the most rudimentary forms of propaganda to the most sophisticated forms of manipulation, the technology is here today and has been here for really for decades, just getting more and more refined, or as I say, higher and higher resolution. As our computing power increases, our ability to analyze brain function and then feed information back into the brain, this is the place we are today in terms of technology. In fact, after writing the book on HARP, I wrote a book called Controlling the Human Mind, over 250 sources documenting sort of the dark side of mind control, starting with the work of hypnotherapists at Harvard's hypnotherapy labs, Estabrook's work going back to the 1920s, and then taking it up into the current frame. You know, that material I actually considered some of my most important work, although it's gotten really nowhere near the attention that the HARP story received. And, you know, another project along the same line was dealing with all of these issues of personal privacy and invasiveness of government. Over 650 sources were used in the book, not controlling the human mind, but Earth Rising, the Revolution. And that book was published in 2000, and here we are in 2015, 15 years later, and I read mainstream media reports that act as if they're revealing something new, stuff we reported on over 15 years ago and sourced over 15 years ago.
Well, the generalized idea that I have with the idea of broadcasting news media is whatever they're telling you, if it's a spooky, dangerous, bad thing the government is doing, not only is it far worse than they're making out, but they've been doing it a long time leading up to this point, and they're only just telling you about it now.
Right. There's an excellent article. I'm sure it's still out there somewhere on the web, and it was put together by Perimeters, which is the U.S. Army War College quarterly, and it was back in, I think it was 98 or 99, the winter issue. The article was called The Mind Has No Firewalls, and it was a reprint from a Russian journal called Orienteer, a military journal, And it was talking about all the different ways that you could manipulate human behavior. And any electromagnetic carrier, whether it's radio, TV, the internet, telephone, even the power grid itself can be modulated in such a way as to change the brain state of human beings in close proximity to those signals. In fact, there was a guy at Laurentian University, Persinger, who did quite a bit of work on this. And in 1995, he wrote a paper where he said, you know, if you put out a complex signal during the time they're running that 6 o'clock news broadcast, you could broadcast a signal over the, not on the television airwaves, but just into the airwaves that would create this certain sense of anxiety and tension in people, and even rising to the level of anger, and then just run the normal news feed where you maybe indict some ethnic group or some organization as being the cause of all of your ills. And a certain amount of that emotional energy would be diverted in that direction in such a way as to move populations in specific ways, sort of that sort of a way to herd people along. And when you think about television as a broadcast medium, think about coming home from work, tired. Most people sit down in front of the TV and their spouse is hollering, hey, dinner's ready, dinner's ready, and they don't hear a word. And the reason they don't hear a word is they're actually in a very light trance-like state. It would be the lower alpha, higher theta rhythms of the brain.
That happens with me and my wife all the time. She swears that she tells me that she told me to do the dishes, right? And I was just like, no, I swear, you know, if you told me, I would have done it. You know, I just didn't hear you. I was in a trance-like state, baby, a trance-like state.
Right, and actually it is. And in fact, when you look at even modern gaming now, you know, they used to do beta testing on gaming where they would, you know, give 50 kids the game, let them play it, and then get their feedback. Well, now instead of that, they actually use a three-dimensional monitor of the brain, like an MRI in three dimensions, where they look at the brain activity to see what specific areas of the brain are firing during the game. And the objective is to create the firing in those portions of the brain that are associated with addictive behaviors and associated with sex and associated with releases of certain endorphins. And so what happens is you literally become addicted to them. And I mean, you want to talk about that?
Mind control. Mind control is addictive, right? And it's true, the mind has no firewalls. I can just plant an image in your mind, okay? Really nice, curvy breasts, okay? Right there. The image is suddenly in the mind, and there's nothing to protect you from it, huh?
That's it. And, you know, here's the thing is, you open yourself to this, you fall into this, kids do particularly, and now you think about interactive games on computer networks where actually the action and the successes are being monitored as well. So you find these folks that are young kids that are really good with the hand and eye coordination, and these are the guys that potentially are going to be flying drones in the 21st century. I mean, the best gamers in the world are going to make the modern warrior, because you're going to be able to sit in St. Louis and fly a drone in Afghanistan, and they'll do it with kind of cartoonish sort of images, so you don't have the same sense of killing people. And so at the end of the day, after you've wiped out a couple hundred people, you can go out and have a barbecue in your backyard in St. Louis and a beer with your buddies, and not have the same post-traumatic stress that you would have had in the war zone. Now, the problem with all this is it makes war incredibly easy, because it becomes not the resisted thing. You know, when men and women come back from combat, they're there for a mission. But when they come back, the last thing they ever want to see is their kids or their grandkids having to do the same. So they do everything they can to avoid war. When war becomes too easy, the idea of avoiding it is no longer in the cards. And so I think what we're going to see as we move into this century is these technologies are going to be used more and more to make warfare easier. And in fact, in the mind effects area, one of the things that they're working on is being able to wipe the brain. And they're using it under the guise of post-traumatic stress syndrome. Because after all, wouldn't it be wonderful if we could just wipe all those memories out? And you stop and think about this for just a moment. what else are they going to wipe out? You know, that we maybe crossed the border and waged war in a few other countries without anybody's knowledge, sort of like we did in Vietnam when we crossed over into Cambodia. Only now you can sort of wipe everybody's mind so they don't even remember it. I mean, you think about the idea of controlled effects, which is what the Air Force Electromagnetic Directorate refers to these ideas. And one of the controlled effects that they spoke about in Technology Horizons, one of their publications, was the idea that we could eventually, and this is where they're headed, be able to duplicate all of the five senses, sight, sound, touch, taste, and be able to create images, memories, memory sets that were so real, they seemed like they were real. Now, here's the problem. What is a court hearing going to look like in 30 years when somebody can't determine what's a memory set implant and what's an actual experience? And this is what our military is working on. And no one is considering this. They're also considering it for ramping up the way in which we train military personnel, that there may be a way to literally download information into the human brain. And then you have another problem that occurs, which is you have no critical element in that, where when you're learning information, you're kind of analyzing it as it goes. And so you're saying, well, maybe I don't agree with this thing, and maybe I agree with that thing. In a download of information, you don't have that screening going on. So it just goes in as if it's fact. And if it conflicts with your other belief systems, we don't know what that will breed, but usually conflicts in belief systems breed psychosis, which turns into mental illness. And so we are dabbling in a world totally opaque to most of us, because most of this is being done by military planners, DARPA, and other institutions of a similar nature, literally around the world. And the idea is to control our adversaries' minds and to control our own troops' minds. And there were two contracts let to the University of California by DARPA a few years ago for this kind of what they called artificial telepathy, the idea of being able to monitor the brains of individuals and literally read their thoughts, and conversely being able to take very complex signals and transfer those specific thoughts into the brains of others. And as our computing power, our ability to build the hardware to mimic the human brain increases, this is the direction in which our military science is headed, and one that is not getting near the scrutiny or the public debate that it should have, because the domain of the mind, the domain of the brain, is where freedom starts, where liberty begins.
Well, it's one of those little ferreted away topics that people don't even understand, and it's technotronic weapons, right? You go right to the average person, you say, what's technotronic mean? And they'll say, is it a kind of dance music?
Well, here's my take on it all is we're moving in what the military calls an RMA, Revolution of Military Affairs. They equate it to the introduction of atomic weapons in the last century, gunpowder in a few centuries before. But the new take is, in fact, a technotronic era, the era of Brzezinski, in which technology overtakes ordnance. The things that blow up, blow holes, bombs, and bullets are going to be replaced by those things that I've heard some say are the perfect Republican weapon. It wipes out all living things but leaves all the property intact.
I can see a great
that's the idea. You don't have to rebuild countries anymore. You just have to repopulate them. And that's the kind of technology that is being developed. Under the guise of non-lethality, a lot of the knowledge has been built. The idea that we could stop people in a way that wouldn't kill them but might incapacitate them as a preference to killing people. And no one would disagree that, you know, that this might be true, but the fact of the matter is we should have vigorous public debate on all new technologies introduced to the battlefield or the private sector that have an impact on human consciousness or the ability of human beings to function. In the same way that we regulated chemical weapons or blinding lasers, we ought to be taking a very hard look at these technologies before we deploy them, particularly considering that they're generally tested on citizens, usually without their consent, here in the United States and elsewhere. I can tell you that Secretary of Energy O'Leary during the Clinton administration admitted that over 500,000 Americans had been victims of human experiments without their consent over a 40-year period. This included everything from radioactive iodine being injected into Alaska natives or syphilis being given to black Americans in the Southeast or the MKUltra victims of the Central Intelligence Agency's mind control experiments. But a half a million Americans that they admit to, and no one has ever gone to jail for that. This is in a country that that's population, that we pride ourselves on freedom, on liberty, on justice. There is no justice in a government that victimizes its own population while waving a flag of freedom everywhere else in the world.
Well, if you didn't wave the flag of freedom, everybody would suspect you was some kind of tyrant that was experimenting on them.
Well, I guess that's true, isn't it? And, you know, when you think about all of this, you know, it always happens that, you know, years go by. I mean, the Church Committee in the U.S. Congress that investigated the abuses of the Central Intelligence Agency back in the 70s and blew the whistle on all this and said, hey, this has got to end. Well, in 2006, the Navy adopted its new protocols for human experiments, including mind control experiments, using those words in their own protocol. In fact, I posted that Navy protocol on my website at earthpulse.com because people just don't believe it. You know, they go, are you kidding me? They still have that in the code? And the answer is absolutely yes. And if you look at some of the contracts that have been let by the Navy, by the Air Force, by DARPA, and others, you'll see quite clearly this is one of the most important areas of research today, is the domain of the mind, the domain of consciousness, the idea of manipulating human beings to further political purposes. And Brzezinski spoke about this in his book, Between Two Ages, Towards a Technotronic Era, when he was at Columbia University. And many remember him. He was one of the founders of the Trilateral Commission, was National Security Advisor to Jimmy Carter in the mid-70s here in the United States, and is one of the biggest influences on global policy.
The dude is practically a freaking supervillain, all right? Like you make a Marvel movie out of him, you know, like Avengers, Age of Brzezinski.
Yeah. I mean, if you read Between Two Ages and recognized it was written in 1973 and you read it without that knowledge, you swear it would be somebody writing a history book of what happened since 1973, because everything he predicted or helped shape has come to be.
It's kind of like how 1984 and Brave New World are very spot on with sort of the general vibe of how societies are going. And it's not because these people were really bright and they predicted the future and everything. It's because they were part of societies that were planning and controlling the development and the socialization of the entirety of the future. And they wanted to release some books and everything to, A, warn people about it, and B, just tell them about it as a form of entertainment, so then when it comes knocking on their door, they'll think it's still fiction and become a victim of it.
Well, and I think this is it. And I'll tell you what I discovered in this research that I think is the most important aspect, and something that never made it into my books because it came much later. And it was after publishing Controlling the Human Mind, I was working as executive director for the Lay Institute on Technology, which was put together by one of the founders, one of the heirs of the Lay PepsiCo fortune. And Dorothy had put together this organization to really look at technologies, and she had me organize a closed conference on mind effects, mind control. And I brought in the former head of the biophysics department for the USSR Academy of Sciences, a good friend of mine, Alex Kavaranen. I brought in Ben Eastland. I brought Brooks. I brought in Garth Brooks from. Many will remember from the Gulf War.
Isn't he like a music guy or something, Garth Brooks?
No, I've got it wrong. I'm thinking of Garth Nicholson. And Garth Nicholson was a full professor at the University of Texas. He was a whistleblower on the Gulf War syndrome, testified six times in front of the Congress. He was running at that time a private institute on chronic disorders. I brought in two electrophysiologists from Europe. One of them was on one of the medical boards regulating medical uses of light and lasers. And I brought Rosalie Bertel, who was a physicist, mathematician, well-respected Canadian, now deceased. And I also brought Elizabeth Rauscher, who's a biophysicist, astrophysicist, and geophysicist. And in that conference, the thing that came out that totally floored me was the idea that the next evolution of humankind was perhaps reaching these states of consciousness that were what the military calls anomalous human capacities or capabilities, which we used to call extrasensory perceptions. And that is what I think the military really discovered and the CIA discovered in the mind control work of the 1950s and 60s, was that human beings had these really unique capacities that if we actually actualized them in our walking state, in our living daily state, government would be transparent. You wouldn't be able to hide anything. And you know, the simplest way to suppress those natural abilities of human beings
is to put everybody in front of a television with mind control beams shooting right into their head so that they're completely distracted from anything that goes on to the government for the bulk of their life?
Even easier.
I'm just taking a stab at the dark here.
All you have to do is create a general sense of anxiety and fear, and you cannot reach your higher states of consciousness. If you look at an EEG monitoring brain activity, when you're experiencing what we would call negative emotions, negative fear, anger, frustration, anxiety, you cannot get to these states where these anomalous capabilities can actually occur. So the simplest way, keep the news media pumping out fear of the economy, the sky is falling, the wars are happening, the economy is a disaster, or just think of the average advertising on television. Your breath stinks, your armpits stink, you don't look good, you need to dye your hair. I mean, it's all about anxiety, insecurity, and fear. And the net result is you suppress the population's natural capacity to reach higher states of awareness, the kind that lend themselves to higher ordered thinking, to the creative work that artists do, and beyond the anomalous capabilities of human beings. What I think the military actually discovered is that latent in every living soul is the potential to change the planet. And that scared the heck out of them. And so when I think of the agenda of mind control, it's about suppressing our birthright, about limiting our ability to reach our higher potentials.
They're robbing our destiny.
The answers.
Well, it seems to me, when looking into EMF and EMR, electromagnetic pollution and stuff like that, and the effects on the body, and it does produce anxiety. And yep. If you've got a cell phone tower, or even if you've got a portable phone, or even you've got an electric light bulb and stuff like that, it is constantly putting out that stuff that keeps you in that state of anxiety. So, right. And all cities are now basically completely bathed with this 100%, most people's homes and all the smart meters and everything like that. So they've literally created a technotronic grid to passively send out an anxiety vibe that will prevent the population from waking up at a physiological level.
Right. And if you think about it, I'll tell you when it's really noticeable. And I used this line in Germany once, and they all looked at me like, what? Because I said, you know, when the power goes out, and one guy raised his hand, it never happens in Germany. The power never goes out. Well, so the illustration was really lousy there, but every American and most of the people in the rest of the world will get this. When the power goes out in an urban area, the first thing everyone notices how quiet it is. When motors stop running, the refrigerator's not humming, the air conditioning's not working. I mean, everything is quiet. But the second thing most people notice is it's like their whole body just exhaled. It's like your whole system relaxes. And as I'm saying it, and you recall power outages, just think how relaxed your body felt as it no longer had to compensate for the external fields surrounding you every second of the day, emanating from every bit of transmission of power, energy, coming through your home, through your pipes, through the airwaves. All of that being shut down, you find a very, very different sense about you. When I go out to my place in the far bush, I've got two places here. One's 80 miles north and one's 250 miles northwest. The one 250 miles northwest is totally off the grid. It takes 2 days to walk in and there are no trails. And when you get there, the sense of peace is profoundly different than anywhere else when you're in urbanized areas or anywhere near power systems. And this is in a real narrow, deep valley. I get very little interference in terms of any kind of communication systems at all. I mean, there's just not. But the differences in these things are profound, and your body is constantly trying to find equilibrium and sort of builds a shell around itself, which translates into low-level stress. And low-level stress feeds cancers, cardiovascular disease, and just about every form of illness gets exacerbated by stress. And look at the condition of the average urbanized population today. Stressed out, heart attacks and strokes waiting to happen, and cancer running rampant.
And record suicides.
Yeah, all of it. And it's stress-related illness. I mean, that is, the adversary is fear, and stress is the henchman.
Oh, my God, SRI, stress-related illness, like an SRI drug.
Yeah. And the solutions are not pharmaceutical. The real solutions are recognizing the root causes and then getting into that. And, you know, people are so willing to prescribe pharmaceuticals as sort of the catch-all. And I can tell you, this is going to be a revolution that ends. The pharmaceutical industry, we're going to equate, like we did, healing techniques from a couple of centuries ago. We're moving into a realm of what I believe is energy medicine. It's going to be much different. We're going to address things at the root. When you think about medicine generally, there's a fork in the road where people that were really good in the chemistry went into the chemistry and life sciences. People who are really good in the mathematics, they went into the physics and the hard sciences in that direction. And really, they needed to come back together, and they have in biophysics, which is an understanding of energy interactions as it affects chemistry, as it affects the body. But it all begins, when you really think about it, with energy interactions, something that most people trained in medicine, they don't have the physics. And the physics is the root of the chemistry that drives all physiological systems. And this is where the real breakthroughs in science and health science are going to come.
Health is under attack because a healthy population can think, right? So everybody's really unhealthy. They can't think. And because they can't think, they can't figure out why everybody's so stupid, why everybody's so sick, why all the people in power are such scumbags, and yet they're rewarded with such riches and such lavish lifestyles and such immaculate hoes.
You know, when you think about it, my family's been in politics a few generations here. My dad was a United States congressman and a state senator. My younger brother, Mark, just finished up a term in the U.S. Senate. You know, I know politics, and I can tell you that what has happened in the last 50 years is so different than it was. I mean, now it's political parties looking for mediocrity, somebody that looks like the good weather announcer, you know, that has, you know, just looks good on TV, smiles just right, and can parrot whatever the script is. But to think on their own, oh my gosh. That is not a desired characteristic in political leadership from political parties. They want them to do what they're told and to dance to their drummers. And that's been the problem. That is what is the root of the problem, is money and special interest in politics. And it's no different than when it used to be between the Pope and the King to do the same thing. And now it's corporate structures, global corporations, and political structures that are, in fact, their handmaidens. And they're not there for our interests. They're there for other people's interests, special interests. And I think that is what has really dropped sort of the bar. And the idea of dumbing populations down, getting everyone in front of the football screen and engaged in the modern 21st century gladiators as opposed to engaging public discourse. The media used to be about freedom of the press. You know, people get the idea it's just about saying whatever you want, whenever you want. And it wasn't intended that way. The freedom of the press was the safeguard for democratic republics and democracies. The idea was the press's responsibility was to inform the public so that you could have strong public debate, which meant heavy opinionated articles, strong editorial lines running through the papers. And then somewhere about 100 years ago, they decided we needed the neutered news. You know, we needed to have neutral news. Well, there is no neutral news. There's manipulated news. but not neutral news. And I think it was better when we had clear bias in the press, where people actually engaged it and debated it and argued about it. Because in that argument, you develop a policy that made it into law. And today, everybody's watching the unreality reality TV shows. I mean, I gave up TV 5 years ago, and I tell you, I haven't missed a thing. And any news I want to get, I consider myself very well informed. And I can tell you, being well informed generally doesn't come from a television set, although there are, I suppose, a few exceptions. In my opinion, they weren't worth screening through. Today, you can select your information. You can draw information from literally around the world, become educated on any subject you wish, and you can broadcast. You can get ideas out in a way that you never could before. We should be seeing an upsurge in debate rather than the suppression of it. And that's why you're seeing so much action to interfere with private communications between individuals, because governments fear that. They fear an informed public. They fear an invigorated public. And they feel that they fear an enlightened public that insists on transparent government.
Well,
you know,
that goes,
cameras on every corner. We need cameras in every government office so we can dial in and see what our congressman is doing, because after all, they better not have anything to hide.
Well, I mean, you know, I always say that, and I had this great meme that I made up, and it had Joseph Goebbels, who was the Minister of Public Enlightenment and Propaganda for the Nazi Germany.
Right.
And he says, if you have nothing to fear, you have nothing to hide. You know, and I said, bro, if your government is using lines from this guy,
right,
you're in trouble, son.
And they are. And I say it's the other way around. I mean, think about this. If parents had the ability through a coded system, so they could dial into their kid's classroom, as an example, and watch the interaction sort of in the background on their computer every day. I mean, and little Johnny is goofing off. Now, the teacher might not be able to fix that, but I know 90% of the parents I know, when little Johnny got home, they'd have their butt in a ringer. And you know what? I think taking the technology, instead of pointing it at private citizens, point it back towards our public employees, those that work for all of us. Put them in every Senate office. Senators shouldn't have anything to hide in their office. If they need a confidential conversation because it's a national secrecy, they do that in closed committee hearings.
You know,
which they can't even talk about. You know,
they should probably do this with technotronic experimentation as well. You know, all the targeted individuals who hear voices in their head and get stalked everywhere they go. I think they should do that to the politicians instead. It'd make the political process a lot more interesting. You know, you'd see the politician on the podium looking around all scared and shit like that.
Hey, let me say this about that. You know, when I testified in the European Parliament about these technologies, the night before the hearing, we had a closed discussion with the committee members, which is something they can do in Europe. You could never do that theoretically in the U.S. without violating open meetings laws all over the place. But in Europe, they did, and they invited someone from the media to kind of monitor that discussion. But what really occurred to them is I demonstrated a device that showed that you could transfer sound information directly into the brain of an individual. And then I said to them, I said, you know, this might not be a widespread technology because this is 1998. I said, however, where would I use this if I really wanted to impact a country? And I looked at those committee members. I said, I'd use it on you. Because if I can influence the political leadership of a country, then I can influence the whole country. I said, you are the victims, potentially, of this technology. And not just some guy on the street. And that's why you ought to be concerned about it. And then in the public testimony the next day, I was supposed to have 15 minutes. And they gave me an hour and a half. After my 15 minutes, they gave me another hour and 15 on questions and being able to answer them without restriction. And, you know, and in all of that, the clarification of the issues for them, and the idea that these technologies could be used against them is what led to a section in that eventual resolution calling for a ban on any forms of manipulation of human beings. Because not only could we prove that the technology existed, we demonstrated it right there. The fact that we had 3 feet of unclassified documents from the United States that showed the evolution of the technology, that's what convinced politicians. And, you know, for 20 years, we've been working on these issues. Have we made progress? I think so. I think more and more people are aware of the technologies. I think that, you know, we're still up against it. I mean, we're at that crossroads where the increasing and more vigorous implementation of technologies that manipulate human behavior is becoming easier to do and becoming more acceptable to do under the idea that, well, at least we're not killing anyone. And I think we have to guard against the trade-off of a vision of security in exchange for our liberty. We'll never win. We'll lose both. And I think it was Benjamin Franklin, that said that years and years ago.
Yeah. I also wanted to bring up Denis Kucinich. He did a piece of legislation that he introduced, calling for a ban of weather weapons, mind control weapons, chemtrails, stuff like that. I mean, did you have a part in that by chance?
I didn't directly. I know that our material was passed on that direction, which was quite helpful. I know that we had friends within the Congress that had read our material and were trying to move some things forward. The problem was and remains today that if you look up weather modification on the Internet, you'll find private companies around the world offering the technology, uncontrolled, unregulated. China, Israel, Russia, the United States, and many others have been working in this area. Now, my position on it is most of what we're seeing in anomalous weather is natural. But when the weather systems are as erratic or at their thresholds like they are today, and then we add that proverbial straw on the camel's back, man's additional manipulation, this is where the problem is. And this is where the risk is today. And again, something that even Ben Eastland, who did work in this weather modification area, he would no longer share anything dealing with weather modification with military establishments or DARPA. And he knew everyone. When Tony Tether was running DARPA, they were first name friends. And certain areas he would not share with DARPA. Weather modification was one because he felt that the military was too reckless and too out of control and too willing to take risks that the planet should not be taking. And that's why military experimentation, I mean, here's what happens in the Congress, for those who don't know. Congressmen and congresswomen go into these closed hearings. They're briefed by Pentagon experts, but they can't take notes, they can't take their staff in, and they can't talk to anybody about anything they've heard. Now, how many scientists do we have out of 535 U.S. senators and U.S. congressmen? Two or three. And they're not the right ones to ask the right questions. And so essentially, these guys go into these closed hearings. They're fed fertilizer, to be nice about it. And they walk out and have no ability to even discuss what they've heard with anyone without risking charges of treason and violations of national security. Now, how can our politicians regulate these institutions when they are not even in a position to ask the right questions? And technology is what makes governments powerful in the 21st century. Look around the world. The most powerful governments are those that have command and control of high technology. And that's why within a democratic republic like ours, we need to have the public debate about what those technologies do, how they work, what the intention is, and then whether or not we believe those should be implemented in a war scenario or here domestically. These are big questions that we ought to be asking as society as we shape the 21st century for our grandchildren.
Now, speaking of the 21st century for our grandchildren, there's been so much talk over the web and around the place about this flat Earth theory. And I just figured, you know, you might have a little bit of a spin on this, as it were.
I don't know what to think of that. You know, there's always stuff on the Internet. And I mean, I always say be careful, analyze things carefully. And you know what I've seen happen, too, is a lot of activists that have been really good at what they do, they fall into this. I think they're like diversions off of their main topic into things that maybe aren't so easily proven or easily refuted. But then you get into the cloudy area of speculation. And I don't think we need to do that. In the five books I've published, there's over 1,650 sources, and they're not phone booth conversations. They're mainstream media reports, military records that are not classified, or major academic studies. And that kind of information carries its own weight. It's why for now over 20 years I've been able to lecture and speak with some level of authority as a reporter on technologies, because we stick to what can be proven. And I think that's really the test of all of it, is everyone's got their issues. Find the one that you can embrace and get excited about, but stick to what you can prove, because that will keep your credibility intact and allow these issues to move a little further into the light of day.
Yeah, gently, gently, one step at a time.
Absolutely.
No need to overdo it.
And, you know, I say something else about that. You know, a lot of people take things on and they go, I really don't know if I can do this. I really don't think I can do this. Then don't. Do what you absolutely know you can. Take that step and you'll achieve it. And then the next one will show itself, and the next one will show itself. And after a number of years or weeks or months, you'll look back and you'll go, wow, I would have never envisioned this for myself. Right. One step at a time, the one you know you can be the victor on. Take that step, and then the next one reveals itself. The only sin is not trying. So take the step in the direction that you know you can succeed on the issues that are important to you, and that's the way the world changes. It doesn't have to be organized around a committee, around some big vision. Have a little vision and act on it, and that vision will open itself to something you didn't expect. If somebody had asked me 25 years ago, would I be headed this direction? I would have laughed about it. I said, no way. I can't even see how that could happen. And now as I look back at the trail I've traveled in the last 25 years and the diversions I've taken along the way, I thank God for every breath I've taken, every hardship I've endured, every success I've had, because I'm still standing, still able to do this work, and still able to make some impact on individual people in the world. And ultimately, that's really what it's about. If we can change ourselves, we have an impact on others that's a positive one, the world will change. We're already in the right committee. It's called the human race. And you don't have to wait to join. Just look down. You're wearing the shoes of the active member. And I believe it. And I see it. I see it in so many different ways. And there really are no small things in that. There's just things getting done and recognizing there's millions of others doing the same. And it's why
I think some of the reason why people just choose to be spectators instead of playing on the field is because they don't look at themselves and don't think that they're professional football players. Well, nobody who got on that football field just all of a sudden they're in the big leagues or whatever. They went through trials and tribulations and training and various other words that start with TR.
That's right. And here's something else I've said, you know, and small things, you know, because a lot of us get hung up on the big vision. And, you know, sometimes it's the very small things that make a difference. And I use an illustration often in lectures. You know, you could be walking down the road and you just smile at the guy walking the other direction. And maybe that individual is on their way to kill themselves. And that little bit of human kindness diverted them from that path. And maybe that individual goes on to discover the cure for cancer. Now, I'd ask you, who is more responsible, the man who gave the smile or the man who made the cure? And I would say they were equally responsible in the dance of life and seeing things change by acting, each of them, on what they knew to be right and true. And that's the only requirement. There are no small things in that. There's only action that results in a reaction. And those reactions are ripples in the pond that we never know where they end. But I believe that. I've seen it, and after as many years as I've been in an activist role, both on these issues and in my previous lives on other issues, I know that to be true. And even to this day, I have people coming up to me, and maybe some small line I'd said in a radio program or something caused them to do something different. I take responsibility for what I say, because I know that if it impacts people, I am partially responsible. And so dissipate the fear, walk in confidence what we can each do on the issues that are important to us, whether it's the things we've been talking about tonight or something entirely different. That's how the world will change.
Thank you very much, Dr. Nick Begich. I believe we have a very short time left in the broadcast. I would like to give you a little chance now to plug your books, website, and other knickknacks that you wish to pawn off on the audience.
Well, I'm actually on the web at EarthPulse, EARTHPULSE, EarthPulse.com. And there's lots of free material, over 700 pages of free material there. Our books are there, some devices for dealing with stress are there, and just some good technologies. And we're putting some things up. I'll be lecturing this January, actually on a cruise lecture, which I've done one of those before, so I'm kind of looking forward to that. And we'll have some information posted on that in the next couple of days. So EarthPulse.com, EARTHPULSE, EarthPulse.com, passed on to friends. And I'll see you guys on the next radio program.
All right. And make sure to get back into contact with me if you ever develop some kind of handheld device where I can point at a politician and make them cluck like a chicken for several seconds.
Hey, I'd like to sell 1,000 of those. In fact, I'd like to be able to give them away because that was just so... Thank you, Vincent. Have a wonderful...
News and information you can trust. This is American Freedom Radio. Freedom, freedom, American Freedom Radio. Radio. American Freedom Radio.
Nutritious food is real body armor. It builds muscle, burns fat, improves digestion, and feeds the entire body the nutrients it needs. Did you know the U.S. government banned the hemp plant from growing in the United States and classified it as a Schedule I drug to hide it behind the marijuana plant? People have been confused about this plant for over 80 years, and many still don't know what hemp is. So now you know hemp is not marijuana, and marijuana is not hemp. They are different varieties of the same species. HempUSA.org wants the world to know these basic facts and to help people understand that hemp protein powder is the best-kept health secret you need to know about. Remember, hemp protein powder contains 53% protein, is gluten-free, anti-inflammatory, non-GMO, and is loaded with nutrients. Call 888-910-4367, 888-910-4367, and see what our powder, seeds, and oil can do for you. Only at HempUSA.org.
What kind of person are you? How do you see yourself? Are you the kind of person that lets everyone else do all the work, just hoping that you'll be able to get some of the crumbs that fall from the table? Or are you the kind of person that rolls up their sleeves and does the dirty jobs that no one else wants to do? Are you hoping that all the activists giving their blood, sweat, and tears to serve humanity are going to solve all the world's problems? Or are you just wondering, is there something simple I can do to contribute? Yes. Yes, there is. Help us. Help us do what we do. Partner up with American Freedom Radio today by gifting a regular amount to support the network and your favorite hosts, bringing you less commercials and more information. Go to AmericanFreedomRadio.com and start donating today from between $1 and $100 per month, according to the kind of person you are. Thank you very much for your support.
We are living in a new era. Partnerships are more important than profit, and gratitude is more respected than greed. As the millennial generation evolves the corporate landscape, our company aims to maximize the achievements of CBD application and push the limits of what's possible by 2020. Our core product matrix and careful cannabidiol purification process are uniquely designed to be privately made in different regions of the world and is geared to assist the efforts of different nations to change the landscape for various pain-related healthcare costs, epilepsy and autism, rising mental disorders, and even soldier suicides. Crystal Pure CBD is made with the industry's finest 99.9% pure CBD crystals. No paste, no filler. Our solution is a permanent answer, and it saves you over one-third in cost. Crystal Pure CBD. Come join us.
You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com, the network who perseveres in delivering intelligent debate, constructive dialogue with true independence. The freedom to broadcast the truth is not free at all. So what is American Freedom Radio worth to you? The empowering information with fun, honest, and pure integrity behind it provides an example to follow. Friendships to flourish with the moral altruism that pulls no punches. The hosts sacrifice and show remarkable discipline in their duty to deliver quality radio in service to the community with strength, wisdom, and loyalty. The founders of AFR wish to thank you personally for sharing your views and insights to make the best radio and alternative media. Now it's time for you to give something back and play a vital role in the future of America. Be as generous with us as we've been with you. Click on the donate banner at AmericanFreedomRadio.com or volunteer by emailing AmericanFreedomRadio.com. Vaccine, psychotropic drugs, and artillery batteries not included.
No rules, no rules, no taboo topics, no taboo topics, no fear of doom, no fear of doom. We are American Freedom Radio, American Freedom Radio.